All right, the topic, science and faith, and tonight we're going to be starting a two-part series on something known as cosmology. But again, just to kind of set the stage for where we are in this series. The big picture, as always, is that we're exploring, now it looks like it'll be 20 weeks instead of 19, but the relationship between science and faith. And we did a shift about 2 weeks ago, shifting into another section of this series, in which we began to look at sort of the current state of some of the sciences. Of course, not all of them, that would take forever, but selected sciences and how these relate to our faith. We began this section about 2 weeks ago with geology and paleontology and this idea of deep time, that the universe is indeed a lot older than we had thought it was for a long time. Last week, we shifted over to Einstein, and we looked at four papers that Einstein wrote in what is known as the miracle year of 1905, and how these papers laid the foundations for the postmodern world that we are part of today. The modern world really being the Newtonian kind of world, the postmodern world being kind of post-Einstein. Last week, what we looked at in more detail, though, was Einstein's theories of relativity. First, the specific theory of relativity in 1905, and then the general theory of relativity in 1915, kind of looking at what was about those. And again, the big story behind that was how these theories reshaped how we actually understand the universe. Kind of a one worldview kind of came to an end, and a new worldview came about as the result of this work. You may remember that in those theories, we sort of re-understood, redefined our understanding of mass, of energy, of space, and of time. Sort of, in other words, all aspects of reality. Today, we're going to turn to another area of science that also grows out of Einstein's work in relativity. You can see a graph over here, a little chart, a little picture that, but basically this is, they label it as the history of the universe, kind of, you know, beginning with the Big Bang, kind of where we are today, and then there's asked, don't worry about the details of all that. At this point, just the basic idea is that there's a progression since the universe came into being. Now, the origins of the universe and the sciences of astrophysics, astronomy, and cosmology is what's behind this, what we'll be looking at tonight. Cosmology, big fancy word, but it simply is the science that looks at the universe as a whole. Many sciences look at aspects of the universe, but, you know, particular, you know, dimensions or, you know, this part of the universe or that part of the universe. Cosmology is holistic. It looks at it as a whole. How does the universe come into being? How does it operate? And where do we think that it's heading? And so these are the kinds of questions that cosmologists actually work with. Cosmology involves several sciences, among them astronomy and astrophysics. I think Chris has mentioned before, you know, there are some astronomers that never even look at a telescope. There are other astronomers that's basically what they do. So, you know, both dimensions of this. Now, in terms of the science and faith, there's two aspects of contemporary cosmology that we're going to be looking at. We'll look at one tonight and we'll look at one next week. But for a moment here, we're just going to put them both on the table. The first is the origins of the universe. What today you've probably heard referred to simply as the Big Bang, which is the prevailing theory at this time. It's not the only theory that's out there, but it's the one broadly embraced and sort of represents the state of science. The second is that the universe possibly evidences something called design. And out of that comes a principle known as the anthropic principle. And that is what we're going to look at next week. It was simply too much to put on the plate for one night. Now, both of these, the Big Bang and the anthropic principle, arise out of Einstein's math. And specifically, they both arise out of his theory of general relativity, which he did in 1915. Now, as mentioned in the earlier lesson we did several weeks ago, pure math or pure mathematics is one of the two legs that modern science stands on. The idea behind this is that through pure math, we can grasp and we can understand the universe using thought alone. It's not empirical. We're not doing any experimentation, simply thought. You may remember Einstein famously did what he called thought experiments. Pure math often leads the way to fundamental new discoveries about the nature of the universe. We saw that earlier in that earlier session. Now, this is one of those instances. The mathematical theory of relativity, turns out, will be the key to opening way for new discoveries in cosmology. So even though that's not what Einstein was primarily going after, it does in fact open this door. Now, Einstein, it turns out, was initially unaware of the implications of his own math. You know, the math is very deep, very complicated, and there are aspects of that that people are still mining today. Now, shortly after Einstein published his theory of general relativity in 1915, Alexander Friedman, a Russian meteorologist and a mathematician, he's the guy on the left, along with a Belgian Jesuit priest, Georges Lemaître, showed that Einstein's math predicted that the universe should evolve in response to all the energy that it contains. In other words, that the universe should start off small and dense, then expand and dilute over time. Not only did Einstein not notice this, when he first heard their theories, he was very, very skeptical. But then, of course, later he was won over. As a result, the stuff of the universe, whatever is in the universe, should over time drift away from each other, something called inflation. Now, this ran against the prevailing scientific view of the world at the time, which was a static view of the universe. The universe always had been, it always would be, it did not have a beginning, it did not have an end, and certainly it was not changing in size. So the Newtonian worldview, and the worldview even before that, was that the universe was essentially static, unchanging, and now we have a new understanding. It was Lemaître who realized that the newly discovered galaxies, this is some empirical research that was coming out, could be used to show the expansion of the universe. And it was Lemaître who proposed in 1927 that all of the mass and the energy in the universe originally had been condensed. This is coming out of Einstein's math. This is one of the implications, that everything had originally been condensed into a single infinitesimally small space. He called it an atom, just a primal atom. This in turn would then fragment and the universe would expand or inflate. Now, there are two implications to their insights into theory of relativity. First of all, if this universe is expanding, as Einstein's math indicated, and as they're working with the mass also indicated, we should be able to turn the clock back and simply to work backwards in time from the observed expansion of the universe today, what we see with telescopes, and go back to the starting point when the universe first came into being. The math was saying this. Secondly, Einstein's math indicated that there should have been an orderly unfolding of the universe since it came into existence. So a primal beginning and an orderly unfolding. Now, this is what the math and the theory of relativity predicted. But here was the question. Was there any empirical evidence that this in fact was the case? Was there any evidence of an initial intensely hot beginning of the cosmos? Was there by chance any residue left over from this Big Bang that we might, for example, be able to see or to somehow empirically verify? Or was there any evidence that the galaxies were in fact moving away from each other? It would be Edwin Hubble who would provide the evidence first for the second of these, the inflation of the universe. And in doing this, it turns out that Hubble would also provide one of the two pieces of empirical evidence for the Big Bang itself. So ironically, it's Hubble that's going to lead to the verification of both of these principles. Here's just the rough timeline, because things are happening quickly. 1915, Einstein publishes the general theory of relativity and it gets out there. 7 years later, Friedman publishes his work that says, based on Einstein's theory, the universe should be experiencing expansion. Then in 1927, Lemaître independently confirms Friedman's conclusions. Lemaître, by the way, did not know anything about Friedman's work, so it is truly independent. And then 2 years later, in 1929, Hubble will publish the empirical evidence for their theories based on 10 years of work that he had been doing since 1919. Hubble was lucky to have at his beck and call the best telescope in the world, the new 100-inch telescope at Mount Wilson. And he was able to use that to explore a phenomenon called nebula, or fuzzy stars, things that were sort of ill-defined, not sure what those were. That's a good challenge for science. He also used the telescope to look at the universe beyond the visible light spectrum. So he looked into the infrared and into the ultraviolet ends of the spectrum. So it's a broad spectrum kind of analysis. What he discovered was staggering. A couple of things. First of all, that some of the fuzzy stars were not stars at all. They were, in fact, other galaxies. Now, until this point, not too far distant in the past, we thought that the solar system was the entire universe. Well, we had progressed to the point we realized that we were part of a galaxy, but up to this point, everybody thought that the galaxy was the universe. Now we know there are other galaxies. This discovery made the universe infinitely larger than we thought it was. It's just another one of those great aha moments in science. Secondly, as he looks at something called the red shift, sound, if something is moving towards you, the sound pitches higher. If it moves away from you, the sound pitches lower. So, when a train comes, it's like a race car. You get the high pitch, low pitch. Turns out the same thing happens with light. If an object is moving towards you, the light shifts into the blue or into the ultraviolet spectrum. If it's moving away from you, it shifts into the red. So by looking at the spectral analysis of all the galaxies, you could find out what these galaxies are doing. What he discovered is that the galaxies, all of them, are moving away from us. And the light shift indicated they were also moving away from each other. This meant that the universe was expanding. This is empirical evidence that Friedman and Lemaître were correct. The universe was expanding with everything moving away from everything else. This has several names. It's sometimes called the Hubble expansion. It can be called the Doppler effect. Oh, that's generally more associated with sound, or the red shift. These are all the same kind of things. Just being able to observe out there, you can actually tell by shift in light, the motion of something. Is it going towards you or is it going away from you? Furthermore, if the universe was expanding, as the data now said, so now we got the math and the empirical data both indicating the universe is expanding, and you ran the clock backwards, the universe collapses into an infinitely small, infinitely dense, and infinitely hot singularity, again, just as our mantra had proposed. It is this singularity then that explodes in what then later will be termed the Big Bang. Now, if this is true, then there should be some residual or leftover heat or radiation from the Big Bang, because it started out infinitely hot. And even though it's been a large amount of time, billions of years, there should be some evidence. But it would not be until 2003 that the second form of empirical evidence would confirm the idea that the universe began with an immense, incredibly hot explosion. In 2003, the MAP satellite, that's short for the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy, hope I said that right, probe, Chris, correct me on that later, mapped the cosmic background radiation of the entire sky left over from the Big Bang. What it indicated, by the way, this is a picture of what they found, indicated that the universe was not only expanding, it also, in fact, was cooling. You can see variations here of heat, and they're sort of universally distributed. In other words, all the data indicated that a single point of creation in the distant past is required for all inflationary models of the universe. We now know that the universe is inflating. There's more than one way of modeling this, but this is required for any of them. Now, the rate of expansion, which has been measured, along with the amount of background radiation, which has been measured, and the math, which has been confirmed, all collectively give us the age of the universe as 13.787 billion years ago, plus or minus a little bit. This is why you'll generally see it's 13.8 billion years old. Now, one of the implications of our current understanding of the origin of the universe, or this Big Bang in the skull, and that now we're moving beyond science into more kind of the philosophy of science in terms of what does this mean? Here's an implication: that the origin of the universe lies outside or beyond the universe itself. Now, just think about that for a second. The origin of the universe lies outside or beyond the universe. Here's the logic. According to the best science we have today, prior to the Big Bang, the universe did not exist. This is part of the theory. Prior to the Big Bang, there is no matter, there is no energy, there is no space, and there is no time. All the constituent factors of the universe do not exist prior to the universe. They all come into being as a result of the Big Bang. This means that whatever caused the cosmos to come into existence was not part of the cosmos. It was not part of the universe. This implies that the causative power that lies beyond the universe lies outside the universe or beyond the universe. And again, these are metaphors that come up short, because we honestly don't know what to say about this. The language that traditionally you would use if you were going to talk about this kind of thing would be religious language. You'd say that something is transcendent, or you'd say something is metaphysical, or you'd say that something is supernatural, indicating that it is beyond the physical universe as we know it. Of course, science cannot and will not use this language. It cannot say that something is metaphysical, because metaphysics is ruled out a priori by the philosophy of science. But it can say, and it does say, that the evidence indicates that the universe had a beginning, and that the cause lies beyond, outside, you know, whatever metaphor we want to start with, you know. It's not in the universe. It's beyond that. Now, this is contrary to the Newtonian understanding of the universe as internal and self-contained. Remember the clock metaphor. But it is congruent, ironically, with the point made in the creation stories, as well as the traditional Christian teaching, not claiming that science proves any of this, but to say the language of the Bible is, in the beginning God created. And now the scientists are saying us, we have a universe that began, and from what, we don't know. By itself, the idea of the Big Bang, that's now been around for about a century, has resulted in an extremely lively dialogue between contemporary science and faith. Many today, both within the scientific community and the faith community, would argue that the Big Bang is one of the best arguments we have for an origin of the universe that lies outside the universe. And by the way, as a religious community, we would take that a step further and say, as an argument for that the universe owes its existence to something else, and from our tradition, that something else would be God. Now, Einstein, whose theory of relativity set all this in motion, turns out was not oblivious to the fact that it had religious implications. You got to be careful when dealing with Einstein, because Einstein is not religious in the traditional sense that he's like a synagogue going or church going guy, and he buys all the beliefs of an organized religion. But he was intensely religious. So here's a few quotes by him, just throwing these in as we end tonight. One is, writing a letter to Maurice, "You find it strange that I consider the comprehensibility of the world, that the mind can grasp it, as a miracle or as an eternal mystery. On the face of it, one should expect a chaotic world, which cannot be grasped by the mind in any way. Now, even if the axioms of the theory are proposed by human beings, the success of such a project like physics presupposes a high degree of ordering of the objective world. And this would not or could not be expected a priori." In other words, you would not automatically think that would be the case based on science. "That is the miracle, which is constantly reinforced as our knowledge explains." Again, not a believer in traditional or organized religion, but Einstein was in fact a mystic, and he did use God language quite a bit. Again, and he's all over the map with it, but here's a few things that he said. "The more I study science, the more I believe in God." Again, not necessarily the way an organized religion would believe in God, but nevertheless, it's his science that drew him. You find this kind of statement a lot in physics. It's the science that brings them to faith. He also said, "There are people who say there is no God. But what makes me really angry is that they quote me for support of such views." Another well-known quote by Einstein is, "There are the fanatical atheists whose intolerance is the same as that of the religious fanatics, and it springs from the same source. They are creatures who cannot hear the music of the spheres." So his physics led him to a kind of a mystical appreciation for the something, and he would call it God, that seems to lie beyond the physical universe. But there's another development that arises out of Einstein's math and relativity, as well as out of the work of Friedman and Lemaître. And it's to this that we're going to turn next week to complete our series on cosmology, as we talk about what is known as a fine-tuned universe and something referred to as the anthropic principle.